I'm Taylor Stafford, and this is Talk Taboo.
Yeah! Come on over!
We ask a lot of people if they like their asshole touched.
We really are breaking down stigmas. It's everything sex.
Okay, guys. Welcome to another episode of Talk Taboo. We are breaking down sexual stigmas, including sexual stigmas today that are really rough to talk about. Oh my God, sorry. This mic. So topics today that are pretty rough. Emotionally, I know that every time I talk about this, as it is very personal to me because this story that I'm telling you today is a story that I experienced when I was in Thailand, which led me to an amazing connection with a woman and her family who desperately need it and desperately deserve it. So, yeah, just a heads up, it's not going to be a really crazily uplifting story, but what me and the Women Against Taboo Foundation are trying to do is uplifting. So, yeah, hang in there. I know some people don't really like the serious episodes, but this is something that's so near and dear to my heart, and is really necessary and honestly is humbly something that we need help with. And so part of that help is through you guys and reaching a larger number of people. Okay. I went to Asia at the beginning of 2019, when I first graduated nursing school. I had about 3 months off to study for the nursing boards and to travel. At that time, I was part of what I was doing when I was traveling in Asia was studying the sex industry in several of the countries. So not just the culture around sex, but the sex trafficking industry, survival sex industry, exploitation, rape, abuse, all of that. So originally I had done a ton of research on trafficking in the world. And Bangkok, Thailand was a city that constantly came up. It was kind of known and still is known for, you can get anything you want sexually in Bangkok. It is, you can go there, you can get prostitutes, you can go to crazy sex shows. Basically you can get whatever you want sexually for a very, very low cost. I won't talk too much about it, but you know, a lot of people think of Amsterdam as one of the sex capitals of the world, and it is very different than Thailand, very more regulated, much more expensive. So Thailand is a place for a lot of people to go and have fun and get their sexual needs met, but I might add, not always in an ethical way, per usual. So I had heard several times that Bangkok, Thailand was the sex trafficking capital of the world. And I learned about the industry, but I also knew that I wasn't going to understand the industry by reading online, reading books about it. I had to talk to the people there. I had to learn and I had to see it for myself, because seriously, nothing, no books, no podcasts, no news articles can take the place of actually interacting with humans, hearing their stories, and interpreting that information the way that you think is appropriate. Just because, you know, all these other people that write books and study the industries also implement their own opinions and their own experiences in that. And so what I really wanted to do was figure it out for myself, figure out how I could help, how Women Against Taboo could help. So I went off on a little mission to a couple countries in Asia, studying the sex industry to figure out what kind of pilot program the Women Against Taboo Foundation could take on in helping people, women, mostly women and children, but obviously men are trafficked too, and how we can help them in the trafficking industry. So Bangkok was the first city that I had gone to. I was with my best friend Shannon, which was incredible because we got to have so much fun. We got to go out, we got to drink, but we also got to start studying the sex industry, talking to locals, talking to people in the community, and really hearing their own stories and figuring out what they think they need. So part of that was going to, I called it like their red light district, basically similar to a red light district that in Bangkok, their biggest area is called Soi Cowboy, which is really funny. I don't, but so we went to Soi Cowboy, and basically what Soi Cowboy is it is a back alley kind of street with a bunch of bars and just like the most amount of girls and women selling themselves than you could ever fucking imagine. It is just in this street, there's just women lining the street. Some of them have number tags on them so that, you know, depending on, they're all labeled as products. Hence their number is kind of like their barcode. And some of the bars had their own women. So women that were contracted with those bars. So some of them had like matching outfits. So you knew what bar they had belonged to. Let's see, what else? You could sit on the outside of the bars, like kind of on the like porches, and you could just sit down and drink, and girls would come up to you, or you can go up to the girls. And then inside the like bar club things, some of them had like dancing, stripping, and then there was also rooms in each bar where mostly men could pay for sexual acts. And I just want to say right now, I have been critiqued before for utilizing gender in the majority. So saying men are buying the women and, you know, it's not all girls and women. There's boys and men that also get trafficked. And, you know, not all men are the ones purchasing the women. And that's it's definitely something I want to acknowledge. Through the entire time that I studied all the sex industries in the various countries I've been in. Actually, in Bangkok, not one woman, I didn't see one woman pay for sex. And that's, right, not saying that it doesn't happen. I'm saying I was doing this for months and I hadn't seen one woman purchase sex. Okay, so that's my own personal thing. I know that it happens, but sorry, it's not the fucking majority. And so if you target those, you know, maybe 3% of women that are buying trafficked individuals and you want to target that, great. The industry is still fucking booming. So I am targeting the people that I saw, and that was women and girls. I didn't see one, well, I guess there were some transgender, there were some transgender people selling themselves. I didn't see any of them buying sex, but for the majority, I mean, there was hundreds, you guys, of women and possibly girls under 18 on these streets, right? And it was mostly white men, not saying they're all American white men, a lot of them were, but it was mostly white men purchasing these people. Okay. So if you want to come at me harder with the fucking logistics and feeling like I'm whatever, reverse feminizing on the men's, then fucking come at me. But it's not the majority. So fuck off. That's not how you make changes. Target the fucking small percentage. Okay. Where the fuck even was I? Okay. So that's kind of like the scene. That was setting the scene of how it was. So my goal was to go there, talk to men who were buying sex, and also the women who were selling sex. I wanted to also talk to owners of the club, which were men, and taking the majority of the woman's money. But that's where you get yourself into some fucking dangerous situations. These are high, a lot of them are making a lot of money because they're taking, I think, about 70% of what the girls are making. If not more, I can't remember. I have it written down somewhere. This is not my whole... me and Shannon are actually going to sit down and do a podcast and talk about the whole experience and talk about the numbers and things that we learned. But today is about Maggie's story. So that's kind of what I'm going off of. So the people that own the club, the men, were taking a massive amount of the money that these women were making from selling themselves or other people selling them. And so as we were talking to the women and men buying sex, I quickly realized that I don't agree with Bangkok being the sex trafficking capital of the world, because these people were selling themselves because they were so goddamn impoverished and desperate for their families to survive, that they had no other choice than to sell themselves for sex. And that is called survival sex. Trafficking is under, through coercion, through manipulation, through withholding rights, basic human rights like shelter, safety, food, water, all of that stuff. It's usually operated under some kind of pimp control. These people are doing this completely against their will. So when I was there, yes, these survival sex girls are doing this against their will, but in the same way that they have chosen, because they don't have any other choice, to sell themselves for sex in order for their families to survive. So I quickly was like, this is, does trafficking go on in these places because of the poverty? Poverty, yes. Poverty makes people more likely to be trafficked because they are more desperate, so they are more likely to be taken advantage of. So yes, trafficking still is in high numbers there. But I was surprised by how many people I found that were merely doing it to survive, for survival sex reasons. So Shannon and I would interview people. It's so funny. Shannon was so much more open to doing it. I was a little bit more scared. I was like, oh my gosh, how do I really know? Which is funny. Shannon's like, I don't give a fuck. I'll go ask. So a lot of the girls that we went up to didn't speak English. So they could speak small amounts of English in order to proceed with transactions. So they would be able to say, how much they were in baht and for each sexual services, and just had very, very limited English that, frankly, they only really needed for their job, which made it challenging for us to be able to talk to them. And we also quickly learned that these women are here to do their job. They are here to make money. And if they don't stay focused on making money, then they are missing opportunities and their family could not eat that week. They could be evicted from their homes. They might not have shelter, you name it. So this, we figured out that this was a very competitive industry. There was a ton of women and a ton of women that needed to survive. Stakes were high. So we quickly realized that we needed to start paying these girls in order to talk to them because their time was valuable. And by us paying them, we were learning, they were sharing, and they were not being exploited, at least for the short amount of time that we were interviewing them, which made us feel like we were at least doing one thing fucking good while we were there. So we mostly bought a lot of the girls' drinks. We used translator apps to try and understand their stories, where they came from, why they're doing this, all the things. You know, as we started buying some girls' drinks, you know, word travels fast, then they all come and talk to us and ask us to buy them drinks. And we were like trying to just build a community there that said, hey, yes, we will take care of some of your needs today. And whether that be alcohol so you can numb the pain because you're about to have a fucking shitty night doing shit you don't want to do in order to survive, we will help you get through that. And so that's what we were doing. So we talked to a lot of the girls, but one in particular stood out to us. You could tell girls that had been doing it for a while and were desensitized to it, to the work that they were doing. You could tell the girls that had been doing it for a while, or probably even started from a younger age, so they were used to it. It was just part of what they did. You know, they were very forward. They were going up to men, being very pushy with men, flirting with them in order for the, you know, to try and convince the men to buy them. Because there was a lot of fucking competition between the girls, because there was a lot of girls. And then there were the girls who you could tell had not been broken in yet, had not been doing this forever, still had their, you know, safety guard up, their morality up, their embarrassment, their shame, and their guilt. And they were, you know, holding that on their shoulders. And Maggie, before at the time, we saw her and she looked... At first glance, she looked timid, she looked uncomfortable, and she was more shy. She was not going up to any of the guys. She was also getting no business because she wasn't being forward, and she was also older than all the other girls. So Shannon actually went up to her, invited her over to our table at the bar to talk to her, and we told her we would pay her to talk to her and buy her a drink. We used the translator apps, and she said that she doesn't drink. You know, she doesn't do drugs, she doesn't drink. And so we got to know her story. So Maggie's story, Maggie sold jewelry in Thailand to all the tourists and people in her community. She had three kids. I'm trying to think of how old her kids were at the time. That was 2 years ago. So I think they were 4, 6, and 16 at the time, somewhere around there. Her husband had left her for a London woman and had moved and abandoned the family and moved to London. Maggie's mom was also living with them to help her raise the children, but she said she was barely getting by. She lived in a city about 2 hours via bus from Bangkok, so she worked Monday through Friday selling jewelry at a shop, and then she traveled each way 2 hours, so 2 hours in the morning on Saturday, at night on Saturday, and then come back on Sunday to sell herself for sex at Soy Cowboy in Bangkok. She said she hadn't been doing it for very long. She hated it. You could tell she was very shameful. She felt guilty. She was embarrassed, but she was open to telling us her story. And she didn't want to stay in this life for very long, but she had no choice. her only choice was, do I keep a roof over my children's head and sell myself on the weekends, or do we become homeless? Her three children, her and her mother, become homeless. They don't eat. She said a lot of them rarely, she said a lot of times she doesn't make enough to feed them anyways. And this was the only thing she could do at the moment to support her family. God, her story just broke our soul. She was so sweet. Okay, party people, we have to take a break because I have to tell you about the IOBA, even though you've already heard it from me 1,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000, So this Ioba toy, it's called an Oh My G. It's fucking phenomenal. It's basically supposed to be like a G-spot vibrator. I wouldn't really call it a vibrator. It's more of like mimicking like the come hither motion if you put it on your G-spot. I personally like to use this toy with a clitoral vibrator or any kind of clitoral stimulation. The combination, you guys, clit stimulation with a vibrator or your hands, then with the Oh My G up the vajay on your G-spot is literally incredible. Seriously, you have to check it out. I love it. Go to iobatoys.com and use the promo code TABOOTAYLOR to get 30% off. And you're welcome in advance. We found out that she was 39 years old. So there, you know, it's not only is it a competitive industry, but it's also an industry that doesn't value older women, which proposed some challenges for Maggie. So it was getting late. Shannon and I had been talking to Maggie for a couple hours. We hugged Maggie. We got her Facebook information. And we were walking away, and me and Shannon, we just looked at each other and we're like, dude, we have to give her all the money that we have. Like, we have to give her all this money. Like, what do we have? How much cash do we have on us? I think it ended up being around $75, which is, I mean, more than Maggie would have made in a couple of weekends working at Soy Cowboy. So we gathered up all of our cash that we had and we went back and we just kind of tried to slip her the money and we said, please take this for your children, for you and your children. And if you choose to go home and not have to work for the rest of the weekend, we support you. And if you choose to stay here and make even more, we also support you. But here's just a little bit for the road. She was so grateful. She was so shocked. She was so grateful. The saddest part that Shannon talks about that, just broke her heart was one of the girls standing next to Maggie. You know, we had seen her a couple times go back to the back with a man, get paid. When she saw the money that we gave for Maggie for simply talking to us and Maggie not having to sell her body to us, this girl bawled. She immediately started crying. She looked like she was about 18 years old. She was just bawling and crying and just looking at this cash that we had just given Maggie and just lost it. And Maggie was thankful, but Shannon and I, our hearts just broke. And at that minute, we had realized that we can't save everyone, but we can save more than just Maggie. And we can do more than the $75 that we had given to Maggie that day. So yeah, emotional trip for sure. Oh yeah, that's how I met Maggie. My heart was in Bangkok for the next couple months of us traveling to the different countries and, you know, still looking for places to start a pilot. One of the things that we quickly learned in Bangkok was what separated the women who were on the street selling themselves for sex and women who were getting by well with jobs, you know, working in the hostels, working in the hotels, being tour guides. Thailand is a huge tourist industry. I mean, a massive part of their GDP, you know, is from tourism. And that's where the industry lies there and where the moneymaker lies. And the biggest thing that I saw was women who were on the street knew no English, but women who were able to thrive in the business culture of the tourism by not selling themselves for sex had pretty good English. And they were able to bridge that gap for a lot of these tourist industries or organizations and be able to talk to tourists and be able to sell products and be able to be at the front desks of hotels and check people in. And they were better off being waitresses at higher higher class bars, restaurants, entertainment events, because they were able to talk with tourists who, you know, mostly speak English. So I had asked Maggie when I came back to the United States, and I just said, I was really up and down. My two biggest regions that I was going back and forth about starting a pilot was Thailand and India. We'll get into India a different time. And I was really going back and forth. And I finally, you know, talking to Maggie when I got back to the United States on through Facebook Messenger app, I just was like, you're a part of my heart. I can't leave you stranded. She would post pictures of her cute little freaking children just looking adorable. And oh gosh, you know, there you go. There's my heart. Sex trafficking and also children, protecting children. So, I asked Maggie, if she would be interested in a program where we would help her, we would give her the means to help her survive with rent and food and all of that, while also paying for her to learn English and then also her children to learn English. On top of going to school. So basically, you know, it would be us paying for all of her stuff so that she didn't have to work at the time, so that she could spend all of her time learning English, being there with her children, and helping her children facilitate school and learning English as well. When I first told her, she was very skeptical. She didn't understand how that would happen. And a huge barrier that we quickly found out of the Thai culture was they do not like to work for free. They pride themselves on being hard workers, not taking charity and free stuff from people. They wanted to work for their money, which I find beautiful, and I also found very frustrating trying to help her from the United States. I won't lie. You know, I'm sitting here like, please just take my money. And she's like, no, I want to work from it. I get sometimes emotional when we talk about her. So she agreed. She said she would need a little bit more information. And, you know, I kind of sold it to her by saying, we're not going to support, we don't want to support you forever. We want to get you to a place where you can support your family by doing work that inspires you, that drives you, and that you're passionate about. And so the plan was for the Women Against Taboo Foundation, including myself, to go to Thailand in August of 2020. Yeah. That's quickly we found out was an issue. So, I was going to go down there, start this pilot program, had translators from, you know, connections that I had made down there from speaking with the community and learning about their culture to really help this program. And it was specifically going to be a pilot to ensure you don't want to put all your eggs in one basket, right? You don't want to put all of your shit out there and then it fails, right? So we wanted to go slow, make sure we were collecting the right data and information. We were doing things that the women and children wanted and were on board with, and also meeting their cultural needs as well, which is difficult. But I had realized it was going to be hard to do that from here, from the U.S., so that was our plan. So March, right, 2020, COVID came to the United States. And we approached closer and closer to August, and obviously we weren't able to go to Thailand. But around March or May, you know, Thailand had shut down, just like the rest of the world had. No one was coming in and out. It's hard because it's like Thailand's unemployment rate wasn't high because people were employed. But if there's no one there buying your products, you know, most of these people are, like Maggie was making jewelry and selling it. So, okay, so she has a job, but if no one's buying her jewelry, then she's not getting an income. So in March, you know, I talk to her all the time, but in March she had reached out to me and said she doesn't know how she's going to pay rent to stay in their house. And Women Against Taboo Foundation board and I started talking about how we could pay her rent, but it was difficult because she wasn't going to take our money. She wasn't going to take our money without feeling like she was earning it. So we had a couple of ideas sparking about her making jewelry, you know, us sending products and supplies for her to make jewelry and, you know, paying for her to ship it back to us so that we could sell it while also paying for her rent. We had a few ideas going, you know, when June came and she finally, after months of us saying, please, I know we're trying to get this all set up, but until then, please let us help pay for your rent. And in June or July, she finally cracked. She had reached the lowest state possible and was so, so desperate and had no choice but to defy their culture's view on work for free and started allowing us to pay for her rent. I know that that was immensely hard for her. And, you know, she had to swallow her pride and her joy. And she, by accepting this money, she was feeling shame and guilt and just failure for so many different reasons. And that was something that, you know, we had to realize is even though we're doing a great thing, We need to work harder at figuring out how to make her feel like she's giving back, so that she doesn't feel so shameful, so she doesn't feel so guilty for accepting the money that we were giving her. So again, we started working up plans to figure out how we, could do that so that she could make products and sell them to people here. To really give her empowerment and autonomy over her life and the income that she could be making. And slowly, towards the end of this year, we realized that she was in complete and utter crisis. Her nephew, about a month ago, in the beginning of December, was hit by a motorcyclist when he had walked out of their house to go to the store and was killed, who was 15 years old. And she, the shame and guilt from her taking money from us and also this girl was working two jobs. She was trying to bring in all the money possible. She would send me pictures of her shop. She has a shop now with, it's like a food shop where she has a lot of like treats and stuff. She would send me pictures, and she said one time she went 3 days with not one customer. She was bringing in almost no income from her jobs. And then her nephew died, and, there was funeral expenses and arrangements. That was the first time, I think November and December, I think December was the first time she had expressed to me that she doesn't feel some days that she doesn't have a will to live. She's depressed. And you can only stay in fucking crisis for so long before your body and your mind just start to give up. And this was where she was getting to, was just complete rock bottom. And, we realized at that point that she's in crisis, and people in crisis, it's hard to reason with them. And setting up this program, not the English one. We had given that one a halt, man. We were like, dude, fuck that. At this point, they're in crisis. We just need to get her to survive and make it through this fucking pandemic. And she... mental health started to kick in, and it still is for her. And there's going to be more expenses moving forward. But COVID is starting to amp up. She said 10 people in her surrounding area of where her apartment is in Bangkok tested positive for COVID. And she said she's just terrified. And that she was so worried about me and my family. She asks me all the time because she hears about how terribly the U.S. is doing with the pandemic. Yep, even in Thailand, they're like, oh, shit. And she's so worried about me because she heard about all the cases in my family. And the stress, it's just, we're feeling it. And every fucking country, every person in this world is feeling it. I still plan to do all the things that we're going to do and to help more families and children like Maggie. It's just, we're playing it day by day, honestly, and trying to survive and come up with strategies to keep this family afloat and hopefully keep other families that Maggie knows afloat. How can people help? Anyone who is familiar with the Thai culture and wants to help strategize on ways that we can improve Maggie and her family situation and people in her community right now would be excellent. I mean, any help that we can get is appreciated. Anyone's talents. Also... through donations. You know, a lot of our fundraisers and donation events that we have and we're going to have this year, obviously we can't have anymore. And so, like most nonprofit foundations, at least small ones, we've been struggling this year to get donations and fundraise has been very, very challenging for us with the small amount of people that we have. And, you know, we don't have huge projects, but the ones that we do have are very important to us. And even those are a lot more challenging for us this year. So, you know, donating, also reaching out to people to donate, any kind of posting on social media is, gosh, it's always welcome. Anyone who wants to volunteer their time to help us, help them. We're always looking for volunteers. I know, you know, it's like so many people don't have incomes this year, right? Or have dramatically reduced their income or on unemployment here in the U.S. And so that means less donations coming to organizations like ours. And also, people don't have time. They're working fucking 7 jobs. They're trying to make money any way that they can. People are trying to stay afloat here. So a lot of people don't have time to come and volunteer with us like we have in the past. And if you are one of those people that are privileged in this time to have time or money or resources that could help us, we are opening our doors and we are welcoming you in to help in any way that you can. And every little thing means a lot to us. And I know means a lot to Maggie. Thank you guys for listening to this story. It's she's someone that's very, 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 very special to me. And I will do whatever it takes to make sure that this family gets through this pandemic. Thank you guys always for listening. Thanks for, sorry, my brain is like not working right now. Always reach out to us for questions. I've been answering so many questions and setting so many people up with services for sexual health. That is one thing that I am taking such pride in. I'm a member of ASECT. So ASECT is the American, you know, Sexual Health, Sex Educators, and Sex Therapists organization that I'm a part of. And so by through that, I can go on the ASECT website and find specific sexual health resources in people's areas. So if you are curious about what sexual health resources you have in your area for various issues, whether that be low libido, sexual dysfunction, fucking hormonal period shit, just trying to spice things up with your partner, sex therapy with your partner, couples therapy, all of that. Send your questions my way. I can kind of take a little analysis of what your issue is and what you're kind of looking for and try and set you up with a practitioner or therapist or educator or provider or blah, 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 that might be able to help you in those issues. So always reach out to us through any of our contact tabs on www.womenagainsttaboo.org or email us directly at womenagainsttaboo@yahoo.com. Or you can find us on Instagram at woman.against.taboo or my own Instagram at IamTaylorStafford. And also, if you want to donate, some people are like, I want to donate just to Maggie. Honestly, a lot of our fucking income right now is going to Maggie. So if you want to donate to Maggie, please go to Women Against Taboo. Oh, yeah, womenagainsttaboo.org, and you can go under the donate tab and donate that way. And then I'm also going to list our donation forms on our Instagram pages, the woman.against.taboo and I am Taylor Stafford, so that we can access people better through there. Also, reach out if you would like to volunteer. There's volunteer tabs on our website as well. Or you can just reach out to me. I don't want people to be like, I don't know how to fill out the form. Like, literally just reach out to me in any of these ways and we'll figure it out. You don't have to fill out the form. Like, just reach out to me. It's fine. We'll figure it out. Keep fighting the good old fight. I know everyone's depressed as fuck out there, but keep being there for each other. Remember that human contact is so fucking important. So whenever you can get it, start touching each other appropriately. And good luck with everything. We will talk to you guys in most likely 2 weeks, maybe a week if you're lucky. It's everything sex.